VentureCast.
I don't know if I've told you guys that I'm a bit of an athlete. And in 1994, I helped the Stars Restaurant softball team in Hingham, Massachusetts, win our softball league. I covered center field like Venus Flytrap. Like,
nice.
Yeah. It was
Venus Flytrap from WKRP in Cincinnati. Are you correct. Making a reference to the WKRP softball
episode, right.
Where Gordon Jump gets a hit with everybody off the field?
Venus wears
God, that's a reference.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Winter break for the three of us educators, is it not?
It is indeed, Tim Plaine, and we find ourselves in the afternoon and not the evening. So yep. I wonder if there'll be a different vibe. And usually it's kind of like a smoky nightclub vibe.
Yeah,
Tim exactly. And I, you know what I mean?
You can hear
it's like after dinner, I've had a couple of glasses of wine. Now I'm at work. I was just grading. It's going to be a different vibe for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, no martini glasses clinking in the background of this podcast. This yes. is indeed day one of my winter break. With my new administrator's schedule, I had to work several days last week after the kids went home.
So but now you're out. Now you're done?
I'm out, but only for a week. And then I go back.
Because you're an administrator now.
Apparently, I have to sit in my office and pretend to be doing work, which I'm happy
to
do.
I was about to say, when nobody's there, are you just like stealing staplers? Like, what are you doing?
I'm being strategic, Ben. I'm strategically thinking about the future.
I like it.
Strategizing.
He's three steps ahead of us.
For sure.
Oh, right totally.
Now. That's why he has to drive to work and sit in an office to think. That's a good sign.
Well, welcome to 50 Years of Music with 50-year-old white guys on the Music City Drive-In Podcast Network. Big news happened in this past week. We reached 50,000 listens on this little podcast.
That's amazing.
Unbelievable.
That's truly amazing.
We started this and our goal was 1,000 listens. We worked our way to 1,000. Then we said, you know what? 20,000. That's a crazy high number. And now, 18 months later, we're at 50,000.
That really is extraordinary.
Well, what's our, is there a cap? Is there
not anymore? We have blown through the cap.
I think also, Timmy, we're going to leave it up to those boys in marketing. You know what I mean? They're just killing it. Jeff and I are extra, extra grateful.
Well, we got to thank also the people of India who have put us over the top here. India now jumping into second place, 7% of all of our listens.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that incredible?
That really is good.
What is our appeal to the people of India?
Our area.
The better question is, what is our appeal?
Very good. There was another major milestone this week. Can we take 30 seconds to congratulate Wardell Steph Curry on becoming the all-time three-point champion against the New York Knicks?
that's a rough transition.
The Celtics beat us last night, too. You want to bring up that?
No, like, I don't want to.
Let's just go ahead and pile on.
Who cares about the Celtics? Yeah. I just wanted to bring it up, not because Steph Curry is my all-time favorite athlete, which he is, and it's not even close. He's also all four Beatles wrapped in one. To make a back reference, the once in a generation Mozart talent of Paul, the killer instinct of John, the friendly down to earth qualities of Ringo, and the general weirdness of George. He's the whole package.
Do we
exactly very Beatlesque? I agree.
I wish people could see Ben's face.
Can we kill Mike on this podcast? Hey, I wanted to share with you Bruce McDonald's comment about our podcast. Bruce is an artist in Vermont. And he said, I ran into you three and started from the beginning of your podcast. I just drove to Florida and back for an art show and listened to Sweet Tunes and you three mystical musical idiots for days on end. Love you guys. I don't remember being in the car with Bruce McDonald for this trip to Florida, but apparently we went with him.
I like mystical musical idiots. I'll take it.
That's amazing. I mean, really, that should go. That's on all of the promotional materials if I'm in the marketing
MMI.
Department.
He says, anyway,
because we should do like the Beatles cover where we're all dressed up as animals and it should say magical, mystical idiots across the top. It would really be great.
He says, keep it going, Bruce. We surely will. I love his list of things that he's done in his lifetime as his own musical, mystical idiot. But let's get to the music, people. It is time for the Grammy winner. Ben Barton, what do you think? We've been kind of going back and forth lately. Are you going to give this one a thumbs up or a thumbs down? Which way are the Grammy voters headed in 1994?
It's the Grammy winner.
MTV Unplugged by Tony Bennett.
Here we go.
Some of those things. Johnny Mercer from Savannah, Georgia. You know, he was asked what his very favorite popular song was of all time. He said, a song written by a colleague of mine, Gus Kahn from Chicago. And here's that wonderful song. It seems like dreams, like I've always had, could be, should be, making me glad. Why am I blue? It's up to you to explain. I'm thinking maybe, baby,
okay. Are we good?
We're good.
This is not what the people.
What in the actual fuck was that? I had no idea.
It's the MTV Unplugged performance of Mr. Tony Bennett.
Oh, that's what it is? Oh, that's so great. That is freaking hilarious.
Unbelievable.
That makes me super happy. That's so good. They were like, you know what was amazing is when we did that Clapton Unplugged. It was basically a soft jazz record. But I feel like, did we really hit it? And same with Unforgivable or Unforgiven. What was it? Oh, Unforgettable.
Unforgettable.
Yeah, that's a
This
brutal.
Is the last hurrah of a whole wave of people who are all about to have heart attacks and die for sure.
It's unbelievable.
That's amazing that they're like the Tony Bennett Unplugged. That makes me really happy. That's not even, they're not even in the neighborhood.
No.
You know what I mean?
What?
Clapton was popular at some point in the last decades before the 90s. But I mean, Tony Bennett, good Lord.
I know what's amazing is Tony Bennett wins this Grammy and then he stays like relevant as a shticky pop icon for until he's dead. He's on The Simpsons, Lady Gaga. He's like the Betty White of singers. Like,
isn't he alive?
Is he still alive?
I'm pretty sure he's alive.
Oh, I thought he just passed away. Am I probably wrong about that? Because if he didn't pass away, there's Tony Bennett MTV Unplugged 2 coming out any second.
Yeah, he's alive, man.
He is alive.
Born in 1926.
He's 95 years old. That's fantastic.
Well, it says years active, 1936 to 2021. What does that mean? Did he just retire or is he dead?
He's still 21, man. He's still active.
That means he started singing in person when he was 10 years old. He is born in 1926.
I'm sorry. He retired from concert performances in August of 2021 due to physical challenges.
Well, there you go. You know, he has the Bronze Star from World War II.
Wow. Tony Bennett. So what song was that?
I'm looking at the track listing.
It had to be you.
It had to be you.
Yeah.
A minute. They were taking the long road to where that turned into It Had to Be You for sure.
Wow.
What would be the one that you would like? What's the one that I might have heard?
I don't know. I thought It Had to Be You because when Harry Met Sally, we'd all be like, okay.
Oh,
all
right. How about They Can't Take That Away from Me?
They can't
Featured
take
Elvis
that away.
Costello. Oh, I wonder why I don't like Elvis Costello sometimes.
Oh, shut up.
That is so bad.
Wow. I'm playing that. Hold on. Here we go. I'm giving a little bit of that.
Costello.
You might have heard of him. Big in 1970.
All right. Enough clapping. Here we go.
The song is ended.
Oh my God, Jeff, come on now. You got to eat this.
I do.
This is a tough one. This is a hard beat for you, for sure.
Oh, listen to that vibrato, Ben. Yeah, no, this version of Costello is not my favorite with the croony Elvis is pretty cringy. I agree. I totally agree.
All right. Well, we got to move on. Love to stay and talk some more Tony Bennett, Elvis Costello with you all. But it's 1994. If you want to hear about Nelson Mandela's election, Nancy Kerrigan's attack, OJ's arrest, Kurt Cobain's suicide, those were all covered in season one of 1994. Nice. Instead, Jeff Simons, let's talk about Stephen Breyer, who was confirmed to the Supreme Court in 1994.
Yeah, because you want to talk to me about Supreme Court justices. I'm the one of the two people on this podcast you want to reach out for Supreme Court justice information.
Well, I thought you just are publishing a book on the Supreme Court. Are you not?
I am. I believe it comes out February 8th, and the initial reviews are pretty positive. I'm feeling pretty good about it.
I got my talent.
I got your guys confused.
Ben Barton. You've
very,
got a book
too kind to me. Too kind. Yeah, but, no, totally. The Credentialed Court coming out in February 8th. And very excited. It's about Supreme Court justice backgrounds before they got on the court. And it argues that today's Supreme Court justice model, really exemplified by Stephen Breyer, but also by, you know, Scalia. Scalia and Stephen Breyer have a remarkably similar, like experience of lives. Breyer went to Stanford. And I'm pretty sure he went to Harvard. I think he was a professor at Harvard, and Scalia went to, Harvard maybe. And then he was a professor at Virginia and at Chicago. I mean, basically these like super extra fancy backgrounds and then super extra fancy jobs. And then you'll be surprised to find out when they get on the court, they kind of think they're smarter than everybody else. And that's how they write and that's how they act.
Uh-huh. Well, I was reading an article today about the Biden administration trying to figure out how to soft shoe retirement to Stephen Breyer.
It has not gone well.
Oh, do you think they've already made overtures?
They've already been back-channeling and doing everything they can, for sure. No,
and he's all set. He doesn't, no retirement.
He feels like if he retired, that would make people think that the court was a partisan institution, which would really be a heartbreaker. That would be the big wake-up call, retired on purpose so Biden could replace him.
Oh, wow. All right. Okay, Jeff Simons, this question is for you. Who won the World Series in 1994?
Nobody. Wow. Right? Isn't this the strike year?
That is correct. You got that right away. I'm very impressed.
I remember 94. Like, that was the year I stopped. Like, I fell out with baseball for a really long time after that.
Uh-huh.
Like, I actually was like when we were together in grad school, I was paying no attention to baseball. I was so pissed at them.
Yeah, because of 94.
Yeah. And I mean, whatever. It was dumb to be mad at a strike. I mean, like, it's just a work stoppage. But there was just something about it that I needed a break. And it wasn't until the Giants opened that new, really beautiful park, which has had 19 different names in the city, that I got back into it. I mean, part of the problem was I was mad about the strike. And then part of it is like, when Candlestick Park and Oakland Coliseum were the two stadiums I could go see baseball in, the two worst places to see baseball in the major leagues. And so I let it slip. But
in 94, there's no way they were the two worst. First of all, the Vet in Philly.
The Vet in Philly was equally awful.
No, yeah. I went to all three of those stadiums in that time frame, and the Vet in Philly was way
the
worse.
Vet is You're like right. Worse. The Vet in Philly was like was horrible. That was a horrible stadium.
No, it did. Like, first of all, it had the artificial turf.
Yep.
And then in the outfield, it had stains, like as if God had spilled coffee on the carpet.
Yep, it
and
really
like,
did.
It's a fake rug. Like, can't you pick it up? Like, why is there a large brown stain?
Can you wash it?
Those were the Juan Samuel years. I just remember that was their guy. Juan Samuel was just a year away. Just like Sean Dunstan and the Cubs. He's just like a year away from being great.
Oh, Sean Dunstan.
Oh, dude. And also, I mean, the Philly fans are already angry. And that miserable stadium with the crappy team. It was like a place that people, it was like a hockey game. They just went to get drunk and fight. But they just didn't care at all.
Yeah, you're right. The Vet was worse. But you got to admit that Candlestick would be like 38 degrees and windy. Yeah, it was miserable.
For sure. Wind.
Sure. And the A's stadium is nothing to cheer at.
No.
I mean, it was brutal.
All right. Well, in 1994, we had Woodstock 94. We're going to play a little game called Were They There? I'm going to give you Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. I'm going to give you five acts for each night. You tell me which one wasn't there at Woodstock 94. Friday night, Suzanne Vega, Blues Traveler, James, Live, and Sheryl Crow. Who was not at Woodstock 94?
Sheryl Crow.
Suzanne Vega.
Suzanne Vega was not
Oh, Jeff's going to murder me
at Woodstock 94. Saturday night, Blind Melon, Aerosmith, Nine Inch Nails, Cranberries, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Earth, Wind, and Fire was not there. We have 2-0.
I thought that was too obvious.
I know. And on Sunday, Traffic, Bob Dylan, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Phil Collins, Spin Doctors.
Phil Collins.
Traffic.
Phil Collins was not at Woodstock 94. Peter Gabriel was at Woodstock 94, but not Phil Collins.
That's actually... I got an amazing Nine Inch Nails joke told by Triumph the Insult Comic Dog.
Oh, I know. So I love
Triumph. Is the comedian act at Bonnaroo the year that Nine Inch Nails are playing. And so he's going through all of the headliners and insulting them. So he yells out to the crowd at the comedy thing. He's like, are you excited to go see the Nine Inch Nails? And everyone's like, yay. And he's like, me, I am less excited to see the Nine Inch Nails. I will see them next year at Six Flags. It just murdered me. It's so funny.
That is rough right there. All right. The number one selling album of 1994. Go for it. America okay. Speaks, Jeff Simons.
America Speaks.
It's the number one album.
The Lion King soundtrack.
Hakuna Matata.
Oh, yeah.
What a wonderful phrase. Hakuna Matata. It ain't no passing craze. It means no worries for the rest of your days. It's our problem-free.
Enough of that.
Does Elton John write that song or someone else write that song?
I don't know.
Somebody else wrote that one, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
He wrote Can You Feel the Love Tonight? I know he wrote that
one. I know that, yeah. And Circle of Life.
He wrote plenty. He's plenty responsible for that.
No, it's Hakuna Matata's written by Elton John, lyrics by Tim Rice.
There you go.
Wow.
Actually, now that I hear it that way, I hear the Elton lilt. That explains my feelings about Elton John. I'm getting all the Eltons today. I'm really
little crocodile
out.
Rock in there is what you're saying.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So my student Ian Hutcherson loves that album. He thinks it's the greatest soundtrack ever. He loves Elton John. And you know, I've mentioned Ian before to you guys because he's the one playing Boz Scaggs at our volleyball matches. He has serious beef with us, serious beef with the podcast, and he has written us what can only be described as a diatribe about our 1993 podcast. I will give you some highlights. August and Everything After is one of the greatest debut albums of all time. 5 of the 11 tracks on the album are the band's greatest hits and very well known by most who grew up in the 90s. The debut album from the Counting Crows opens with one of these classics, Round Here. The song details where the band comes from, the same place that we, the listener, come from.
Round Here?
Stop.
That's not inaccurate.
The Counting Crows' most popular song, Mr. Jones, explores the main theme of the album, wanting to be something greater. Juxtaposed to the previous slower tracks, Mr. Jones gives a glimpse of the band's greatest strength. Their music can grab you by the hand, like your high school girlfriend, and take you on a wild journey, even if only for a few minutes. He goes on and on and on, attacking us for not choosing August and Everything After for our greatest album of 1993. Jeff Simons, could you just play a little bit of one of your favorite songs from that album?
Oh, I'm going to play the signature moment from the whole record. You ready?
Wow. Okay.
Here we go.
I said that I am great. I said I.
that yeah is everybody in the Bay Area does that yeah with each other in rehearsals. Cause we, I don't mean to play one up with Mr. Ian, but I'm actually legitimate friends with a couple of Counting Crows. Like we've been in each other's houses and know each other's kids' names and attend Warriors games together. And when we have a really good take in rehearsal, my friends and I will look at each other and go, yeah! It goes really well. So that for me is the signature moment on August and everything after.
By the way, that's a top five Counting Crows song right there.
No, nope, not for me. But that's only because there are so many fantastic Counting Crows totally. Songs.
That Rain King doesn't make your top five.
Nope.
No. I love that song though.
Yeah, it's great. But I mean, I just like, so the reason I didn't pick August is because we talked about the Crows already.
Right.
I mean, not only do I love this band, but I actually love a couple of guys in this band a lot. Like, I love these guys. I'm a huge fan. I have no beef with anything Ian said. But we're just trying to spread love around with more than one band on this podcast. So.
And I've got good news and bad news for our brother.
Okay.
The good news is I am going to choose the Counting Crows record. The bad news is August and Everything After is my third favorite.
Yes. It's my second, but you're going to pick the best one because the best one is unquestionably not this one.
No, I already talked about that last time. So I'm going to choose a different one.
No way. Well, that's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait. I'm sorry. I feel a little lost and confused.
Recovering the Satellites is my favorite. It's Jeff's favorite. And in my opinion, it's the best.
That yeah, the best second one. Record is their best record. Recovering the Satellites is one of the all-time awesome. Top 50 records. I love it.
Well, but you have a second one before this one, Bet.
Correct.
Which is?
Coming up.
Find out. Strap in, Timmy.
Teaser. Marketing tease.
That someone's been studying how to be a host. Good job.
Yeah, just got to keep coming back.
Gunning for my seat. I see.
No, but this record's great.
So great.
There's not a bad song on it.
And
Ghost Train is not great. There's a couple of slowy ones, but there's so many great ones.
But that thing was on a loop in my car. Just never took it out of the cassette deck there.
Yeah, Jimmy, all right. What did you choose? Why didn't you choose that one? What was your 93 selection?
I might have a Counting Crows coming up as well, Ben.
All right.
Did you choose the Cranberries or something?
Yeah, I chose the freaking Cranberries over August and everything after.
First of all, why are you back at the buzzer with me and Jeff? We've already both expressed our love for this band. You're the problem. You're the one who owes this guy an apology.
I love the Cramp. All right. Anyways, let's move on into our invitation to cynicism. Jeff Simons, you're a fan of local music and believe in supporting local music, right?
I am.
Like local acts, local bands.
I do.
Also, Jeff Simons, you like punk music, do you not?
I like punk music and I like local bands. I like where this is headed.
So you are a big fan of Green Day.
Early Green Day, I am.
In 1994, Dookie comes out.
It sure does.
Which launches them nationally. Hit us with a song. Go.
Why overthink it? Let's just go.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything all at once? I am one of those melodramatic fools, neurotic to the bone, no doubt about it. Sometimes I give myself the creeps. Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me. It all keeps adding up. I think I'm cracking up. Am I just paranoid? Am I just up?
Hold on.
I went to-
now we can stop. That drum fill is so badass.
So you like this album?
I do.
Oh. You like, where does Green Day fall off for you then?
Probably around Warning. There's a record where all the songs sound like late 60s Kinks ripoffs, and it's all gotten a little too slow for me. And then they became so big that like, I mean, I respected American Idiot, but I didn't enjoy listening to it as much as I wanted to. Like, I like the idea and like I'm never going to make fun of a band for trying to make 9-minute songs. That's awesome. But it doesn't move me the way the early stuff is. But I really like Kerplunk and Dookie. And Insomniac, I didn't like when it first came out, but I actually like it a lot compared to how I liked it. And then like Nimrod, Warning, I start to fade. And then I have not had a lot of time for them. Like they did those three Uno, Dos, Tres records. I thought there was like a good song in each one of those. And the last record I didn't love. But I got no problem with Green Day. Like they work really hard and they've raised a mighty racket as a trio. Like they're, you know, they haven't, you know, they haven't made an embarrassing record as far as I could tell. And they're still a good live act.
I dated a woman in graduate school who called them posers from Pomona.
Well, she's completely wrong. They're not not from Pomona, and B, pretty darn good.
Ben Barton.
I mean, so I like them too, and I definitely like this record for sure. I bought this record and I like this record. When we talked about Nirvana, Jeff pointed out that Nirvana was like a remix of older music. This one's not even really a remix.
No, it's just
older music.
Yeah. I mean, it's like
so
stiff little.
Like I like that genre, and actually, you know, like the guitar sounds a little bit different, so that's good for me, but it's really, really, really just straight ahead power punk of a kind that's not, it's good, but they're not adding a lot to it. At least
no.
In my take on it.
Okay. No, it's like Stiff Little Fingers meets The Jam meets like all that first wave of pop punk music. Totally.
Dookie. That's his name, Dookie. All right.
So you were offended by it. You thought a record named after the first two records are named after taking a poop. And that probably bummed you out because Kerplunk is also a reference to that particular event.
Okay. I did not realize that. but that's good. Good that I know that now. I feel smarter.
Are you anti Green Day because of that unfortunate moment with a.
No.
Your grad school girlfriend? No.
I just think I didn't like them in the 90s because I didn't really believe them. But now when those songs come on, I kind of groove. And
those
I
are working like class kids from Berkeley who came to that anger totally legitimately. I mean, those aren't posers for sure. I mean, I agree with Ben that they're revisionist and they don't break any new ground, but they're true believers for sure. Also, do you remember how great their set was at Woodstock 94? That's the show where the audience tears up the turf and starts having a giant sod fight.
Oh,
and they start throwing
it
at the band and he catches a big piece in his mouth. And the whole mud battle starts with their set. And they just play a 29 minute, just barn burning up, down and all around set where they're throwing dirt back at the audience. If you haven't seen it, go to YouTube. Like, it's a star-making moment. Like, they're so perfect for that. They're a perfect soundtrack for that mud fight.
All right. Well, Ben Barton, it is time for you to make your comeback on this podcast. I think you're down 3-0 because of Woodstock 94. But guess what, Ben Barton? People died in 1994, and you have a chance to benefit off their deaths.
Oh, my God.
All right. Let's go. Who died? Politics, Crook, Checkers,
Nixon.
Ben Barton, 1-0.
Oh, am I playing? I thought you were just giving him points.
We have to mute you, Jeff, so that I could get some.
Okay, I'm out. I'm muted.
No, of course you're playing. Unmute yourself.
Okay.
That was Nixon. Get, by the way, you got other way to Checkers, and I was like, is Jeff even going to say anything?
I thought it was your chance to have fun.
All right, second person, comedian. Canada.
Oh, John Stripes.
John Candy is correct. Politician. Boston. Speaker of the House.
Tip O'Neill.
4-2 on the day. Let's get to
I thought you were going to do Cheers cameo for Tip O'Neill, too.
I could have done that.
Yeah.
Our three albums. Let's go.
Our three albums.
I have no idea who goes first.
Me neither.
I'll go ahead and do this thing. In 1987, two weirdos, Michael Dorff and Louis Spitzer from Madison, Wisconsin, open the Knitting Factory in on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And actually, it's been in three different locations. It's now in Brooklyn, the Knitting Factory. And I've seen a number of shows there. I'm pretty sure I saw it at the second location. They opened it up in a former Avon Beauty outlet. Basically, there's this empty storefront, and they're like, oh, let's open this up, and we're going to make an avant-garde jazz place in here. They don't have a liquor license. They just open the place and start having jazz shows in there. At that time in the 80s, there were a bunch of jazz clubs in New York, but they were all like the bottom line. They were all like very serious, old school jazz people, and there was no place for the super weird, new, modern jazz stuff that was going on to play. And so the Knitting Factory fills this hole. And it's like a hilarious old fashioned, only in New York in the 70s and 80s and maybe early 90s could something like this happen, where there's like the rent is cheap enough. They don't care. They literally put in a club without telling anyone. They eventually get around to getting a liquor license. Anyhow, they like after a couple of weeks, one of the bands that they booked was like, what are you doing? And the guys were like, well, we don't know what we're doing. And he's like, just give me $175 a week and I'll just book this place for you. And so he starts booking it. And all of a sudden it's Bill Frisell and John Zorn and like all of the best guys in New York are all of a sudden playing there all of the time. And the place just takes off like a rocket. That takes us into the early 90s when a young man named Mike Doughty is the bouncer at the Knitting Factory. He takes the tickets at the front door. And because he's an army brat and a weirdo, he's lived all over the country, and he came to New York to go to the New School to study poetry. Needless to say, he drops out so he could be a bouncer at the Knitting Factory. And he also does scat poetry at the door. That's one of his things. Like, people come and he's just doing this free form poetry. He gets to be pretty good friends with some of the players there. And Jeff, can you name the band?
I cannot yet name the band.
Soul Coughing.
Oh, Soul look Coughing at you.
Is born in the Knitting Factory, and in 1994, they put out their debut album, Ruby Vroom. Now, first, let me just get this out of the way. This is a band that's too clever by not a half, by like 18 halves. They are way, way, way too clever. It's literally scat poetry over an old-fashioned jazz background. Like, there's a stand-up bass, and then there's a drummer, and then there's actually like a weird keyboardist who also does weird looping samples. So that part's kind of new and experimental. And it didn't chart. Under no circumstances would I know about this band, except for my dear friend, Kate Splain, who was in fact working at Warner Brothers Records in 1994, writing liner notes. And again, like just the way the record companies used to work, like she earned a six-figure salary in her 20s writing liner notes for albums as like part of a team of 35 that did this. Like, it's just insane how it used to be. I had a job interview at a law firm in LA, flew out to LA, and I was like Ben Bart, international lawyer. Like, I was so excited to wear my suit on the plane. After the interview, I went and hung out with Kate Splain. So I got to go to the Warner Brothers music place in LA, see her office. And she just piled me up with the promotional CDs. And of course, with her own opinion on each of them. And she was like, this will be good. No, yes, no. And she's like, oh, it's a shame you just got here. Will you miss Neil Young by a couple of hours? Anyhow, the Ruby Vroom, she just held in her hands and was like, I'm asking you to listen to this. And I was like, okay. And she was like, yeah, it's a jazz quartet with mumbling poetry. And I was like, no, I'm not going to listen to that. She was like, no, I'm telling you, I work at Warner Brothers Records. If there's one of these you're going to listen to, it's going to be this one. Couldn't have been more right. I freaking don't like, I love this record. Super experimental and weird, but it's like, and it's one of those things where it's a genre I do not like, but it's so exceptionally good that I like it. And it's like, gets extra points for me having to overcome all of the things that happened to it. Jeff and I saw the lead singer, Mike Doughty, in Bonnaroo.
We sure did.
Six, and boy, did he tear it up.
Man.
He's got a bunch of solo records. That solo record that he was touring on, Haughty Melodic, which is actually an anagram of his name, Jeff. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. It took me like 6 years to figure that out, but yeah, I did totally figure that out. Yeah.
So that record is great also. I could have chosen that record, but this is actually my favorite work of art by these guys. I guess you want to start at mint second 35 of True Dreams of Wichita.
Nice call.
Ruby Vroom by Soul Coughing.
Right up to the plunge down. Man's sends the ray of the electric light, sends the impulse through the air down to home. And you can stand on the arms of the Williamsburg Bridge crying, hey man, well this is Babylon. And you can fire it on a bus to the outside world, down to Louisiana, you can take her with you. I've seen the reins of the real world come forward on the plane. I've seen the Kansas of your sweet little myth. You never seen it, no, I'm half sick on the drinks you mixed through your true dreams of Wichita.
Yeah, so Doty grew up as an army brat and lived all over the country, and the record's got all this weird geographic to it, parts to it. Like, I love, you can stand on the arms of the Williamsburg Bridge and say, hey man, this is Babylon. Like, that is just such an amazing explanation of, and also the club was right next at the foot of the Williamsburg Bridge. So he definitely walked out of that club and then walked under the Williamsburg Bridge and just like was like, I can't believe that I live in New York City. I'm an army brat. It's got the Wichita, there's the City of Motor song that's probably about Detroit. There's definitely an LA song called Screenwriter's Blues. Like, it just is like this journey all through America. Fantastic. I love this record.
It's a good record. I prefer Mike Doty's solo stuff. I feel like, and I know I'm not supposed to, I know I'm supposed to like Soul Coughing better because that's when he broke through, but I actually think Haughty Melodic's his best record. It's where he... I feel like he gets better control of what he wants the backing track to sound like over his poetry on Haughty Melodic. And he also figures out how to do that repetitive thing. He doesn't have it yet, but you know, like all those songs on Haughty Melodic are getting a great phrase and just working it, like almost like rappers work a great phrase, like lonely and the only thing you got to do to bat it down and the only thing you got to do to beat it down. Like, I just love that record, and that's all Ben. Like, Ben dragged me to that show at Bonnaroo. It was like, we are watching this guy, and like three songs in I was like, where's this been my whole life? I was late to the party here. So maybe that's because you like the, you like your entry point usually best with an artist. But
yeah, so I'm not anti that record at all. I think that record is also fantastic.
Yeah,
here's what I would say about this record: the bassist and the drummer and the keyboardist slash sampler have all gone on to have studio careers.
Yeah, they're great. The it's a great band.
Fiona Apple's bassist.
And yep.
The piano players played with David Byrne and a bunch of other people. Drummer's gone on to be a studio drummer. They're fantastic players, and they really bring like an extra edge to it.
The other thing I'm really struck by is, like you mentioned it with Warner Brothers Records, like you would think that this band would have zero chance to have a major label deal. And yet in the 90s, like the record companies had so much money that they would throw a curveball like this. Like, yeah, these guys seem cool. Let's give them $250,000 to make a record and tour around. And the thing that drives me so crazy now is with Spotify, anybody can release anything. Like a band like Soul Coughing could make Ruby Vroom in their basement for about $1,500 and have it up on Spotify. You know what everybody's doing instead? Everybody's trying to sound like a hit, so that they can get on a television commercial, they can get into a movie and make money. And it just drives me crazy. Like, the absence of record labels is actually making everybody sound more like one another. And it really, it's such a cautionary tale about art. Like, I'm listening to this and I'm like, if I make a second record, it better be interestingly different from the one I just made, because I have no one to answer to. Like, what am I doing trying to write a hit when there's no hit maker machinery? And yet everybody I know is like, oh, I don't know if my record sounds commercial enough. And it just pisses me off. Like, make your own record.
If Dahlia and Georgia were here, but especially Dahlia, she would be like, no, Jeff, you got that a little bit backwards, because a big way to move into record sales is to do TikTok. And TikTok is looking for weird samples that people are like, huh, what's that? And
total bullshit. I wish she were right, but I just scrolled through TikTok yesterday And oh, everything not, sounds like the top 10.
You cannot do the 10. Grandpa. I scrolled through it and I heard nothing of interest. That's I didn't hear not anything. Okay.
Dude, I tell her to send me examples of weirdness making because all I hear is the top 10 over and over. In fact, it's one sample latched onto overused a million times. I'm fine. I challenge Dahlia. Dahlia, come on the podcast and prove me wrong. I issue a challenge. Let's do this.
Hold on. Give me 2 seconds and I'm going to come up with something that's unusual and hilarious.
Okay.
Right. Because I do think like it starts to like throw videos at you that are like the videos that you've seen before. So it's not going to go experimental.
He's working on it.
Okay. Just on its own. One of the TikToks that Dahlia sent me, she knows how much I love Mystical. I am a huge, crazy Mystical guy. I think I chose a Mystical song.
You did.
One of the songs. Yeah. I love him. Anyhow, there's a Mystical clip that's just him a cappella rapping on a New Orleans radio station from like, you know, 2000, like right at the very beginning of his career. And so he's like, and if you see me in the woods and I'm fighting a bear, help the bear. That's the line. And apparently that's a huge TikTok thing. Like they've stolen that one line and there's like, they put different scenarios underneath it of somebody who needs help. Anyhow, I think that's an example. Like they are looking for weird things that become memes. And also you can't do it the way you did it. Like if I tried to scroll on, just be like, show me the most popular TikToks and they're just going to be all Ariana Grande. Like there's like a subculture. There's a weirdness.
Yeah. All right.
Have that for sure.
Good. Well, it makes me happy to hear that.
50 years of TikTok with 50-year-old white guys.
God, yeah, that sounds like a really bad idea. Like,
so I gotta say, I half feel that you guys are playing a practical joke on me because I've never heard of Soul Coughing. I've never heard of Mike Doughty. I've never heard that song.
Isn't it Doughty?
I don't. It's D-O-U-G-H-T-Y.
I actually don't know either of them. So this is a real thing.
Yeah, no, man, for sure.
Soul Coughing.
Yep.
You'll recognize the album covers when you see them. They were
really,
they made two records. There's a one with a yellow and black cover. That's the follow up to this.
Yeah, L.O. So that's the third.
That's it. L.O.
So three records.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna check them out. It sounded really cool. It sounded right up my alley.
You'll dig it.
You will dig it, actually. Yeah.
All right, Jeff Simons, what you got for 94?
I want to start with, I hate false advertising. I am not a big false advertising guy.
Okay.
When something is named a particular way and you think you're going to get one thing and you very much get another. And one of my favorite terribly named things in America is a university out here near where I live. There's a place called the University of the Pacific. Doesn't that sound like the kind of place you would like to spend 4 years at? The University of the Pacific, overlooking the Pacific Ocean and
sounds great.
The fresh, but doesn't it sound great?
Yeah.
I imagine students from outside the United States thinking about studying in America, and they're like, oh, look, there's this University of the Pacific. And then they arrive at the University of Pacific, which is in a town called Stockton, California.
Oh, no. Is it?
Stockton, California is deep in the Central Valley. It begins a series of Central Valley towns. Stockton, Modesto, Merced, Fresno, Bakersfield, I-5 for those of you that don't live out here, cuts right through the center of the state. It is California, not the palm trees, Pacific Ocean version of California, but the agricultural center that feeds America, but is really flat and sad and culturally pretty rough. Stockton is also a very rough town. Do you know now when you go to Target and they've got those big cement red balls in front of the doors. Do you know why that is?
Oh, I do know why. Because otherwise you would drive through the glass window, steal as much shit as you could and back out with it.
And that particular kind of smash and grab was started in, wait for it, Stockton, California. This particular kind of thievery found its origins and became a particular kind of expertise. Stockton is a tough town. It's on the decline. It's the beginning of the Inland Empire. Not much has come out of it, except my 1994 band, which has its origins in this bizarre, forgotten place, not the Bay Area, not any part of anything, but one of the iconic 90s bands, Pavement, which is my pick for 1994, comes from Stockton, California. The guy who is the kind of central figure of Pavement, Stephen Malkmus, who's gone on to a very long solo career, gets his start in this band, and he is surrounded by a bunch of his weirdo friends, and they kind of almost accidentally make a debut record. Stephen Malkmus and his friend Scott Canberg, who also goes by the nickname Spiral Stairs, are kind of making tracks together in their basement, and they get their friend Gary Young to record them and play a little drums, and they make a record called Slanted and Enchanted, which comes out on Matador Records, which becomes a really big 90s label. For those of you listening at home, I have bored Tim so much that he has left the podcast. He has actually exited the frame.
Sorry, clean up some dishes there. Oh, you were saying.
Holy shit. That was not what I would
Timmy,
call
he's still talking about
a vote of confidence. Anyway, speeding up, they make a debut record. I like it. I don't love it. It's messy on purpose. It was called Slacker Rock when it came out, because there are mistakes on it. The tempos are kind of draggy and mid-tempo. The live show is kind of shambolic. And in some ways, Crooked Rain doesn't really improve things. Let me read this from the Wikipedia page. During the Slanted Enchanted tour, Gary Young's behavior became much more eccentric. He would hand out cabbage and mashed potatoes to fans at the door of the venue, perform handstands, drunkenly fall off his drum stool, and run around the venue while the rest of the band continued playing. So they go back in to make this second record. And this is really, again, it's an accidental band. These are just kind of like guys from Stockton biding time. But when they go in to make Crooked Rain, Crooked Rain, the second record, they accidentally, I think, kind of realize that they aren't just kind of a weirdo one-off art project, and they're not an ironic version of a rock band. They've actually become a pretty great rock band. The songs on this record are a huge jump forward. The performances, while still a little messy, are the perfect kind of messy. They really do develop a sound and a groove here. Again, when this record came out, I liked things to be a little louder. I liked things a little faster. I liked things to be a little harder. I rediscovered this record when they put out a 10th anniversary version, and I just fell completely like a ton of bricks for Crooked Rain, Crooked Rain. I really love the 12 songs that compose the main record here. There's the deluxe 10th anniversary edition is like packed to the gills with B-sides and live tracks, and there's like, it's super hit and miss, but these songs really, really sit together. I could play Silence Kid, I could play Stop Breathing, I could play Cut Your Hair. I mean, I really love a lot of songs on this record, but I'm going to play my absolute favorite Pavement song, which is also kind of, it sums them up. It's called Range Life. And again, like, it's got everything this band that they do well and everything they don't do very well, all kind of layered and smashed together. And to quote Mark Twain, this is an example where when all the ingredients blend together and the juices mix together, it just tastes better. So here's Range Life from Pavement. Sorry, Tim, I tried to go quickly.
Crooked Rain, Crooked Rain by Pavement.
Glow, the scene, the stage, the set. Talk becomes slow, but there's one thing I'll never forget. Hey, you gotta pay your dues before you pay the rent. Over the turnstiles and out in the traffic, there's ways of living, it's the way I'm living. Right or wrong, it's all that I can do.
Love that song. I love Cut Your Hair, that song.
Yep. It's a good record, man. I saw this band twice, but it was after this tour. I saw them on the, I think it's Bright in the Corners. No, that's way too late. Maybe Terror Twilight, 97 and 99. And they were still really good, but they were, you know, they're fighting on stage and Malkmus was like really erratic and flipping off the crowd. And like, they never quite, part of the charm, I think, for people at Pavement is they never really quite became a fully professional band. When Malkmus went solo, he became a much more traditional professional musician, album, tour, really consistent. Uh-huh. This band's jagged edges. When this band gets it bad, they really get it bad. Like, they're almost like the Grateful Dead of indie rock. Like, when Pavement's on, they don't sound like anybody else and they're really pretty special. And when they suck, they really suck. They make a record after this called Wowie Zowie that now people are like, oh, it's a great lost record. I think Wowie Zowie is like all of their worst instincts and impulses
put together,
packed into a record. That's a hard listen. But this one really threads the needle for me between like amateurish, experimental, don't give a shit, and some actual real talent and instincts. And it's right there. I really like this one.
Ben, do you like Pavement?
I dig this one too. I like Pavement. And this is a really good sign. No one has mentioned my two favorite songs yet on this record.
Oh, hit it.
Flux Equals Rad. Love that one. And then my all-time favorite on this is Heaven is a Truck Eggshell. My problem with the one we played, Range Life, is it's 4 minutes and it's mid-tempo. Flux Rad is super fast and it's 2 minutes. And Heaven is a Truck is super slow and it's 2 minutes. And this, perfect.
That's where you want it.
Yeah, it's a great record. It's for me, like, it's the only place to start with this band. If you don't like this record, you will not like them.
If you like this
record, you might like the two records on either side of it and maybe some bonus tracks here and there.
Is Malkmus still making music right now?
Yeah, man. He makes a record like every couple of years, like clockwork.
And they're pretty good.
Yeah, no, man. He made a record called Real Emotional Trash in 2008 that I think is a really great lost record. I saw that tour as well. And it's a great record, not a good one. I really love that record. So he's still got juice in the rocket sauce bottle for sure.
What album is Jenny and the S-Dog from?
That's from the debut solo record.
Okay.
Which also has that hilarious song about Yul Brynner. I can never remember the name, but it's like, my name is Yul Brynner and perhaps you saw me in Westworld. I played a robotic cowboy. It's so funny. It's such a great, great song. So funny.
Good stuff. See, I was paying attention. I was on board. You don't know this, Jeff Simons, but the kids are out of the house Christmas shopping. And so I've got a limited time. So I'm trying to do things as I record the podcast.
Dishes being one of the things you do when the families are out. I'm impressed.
It doesn't get done otherwise. You know what I'm saying?
See, look at that.
Hey, let's get to my album of 1994. I don't know if I've told you guys that I'm a bit of an athlete. And in 1994, I helped the Stars Restaurant softball team in Hingham, Massachusetts, win our softball league. I covered center field like Venus Flytrap. Like,
nice.
Yeah. It was
Venus Flytrap from WKRP in Cincinnati. Are you making a reference to the WKRP softball
episode
where Gordon Jump gets a hit with everybody off the field?
Venus.
God, that's a reference.
So
good.
Also, Timmy, the best player in softball plays shortstop. Let's just be clear here.
Well, that would require an arm.
You didn't have an arm, so they put you in center. Did you walk the ball in?
No, I would make sure I caught it or got it to the shortstop right away.
Tim is a good athlete. I've witnessed his athleticism many a time.
Anyways, on the drive to the softball field in 1994, we would play. My buddy Joe driving at the wheel of his rabbit. We would play Crazy, Sexy, Cool by TLC. And you know what my mother used to tell me, Jeff Simons?
I shudder to ask, actually,
to be honest. Tell me it's Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls.
She would say, don't go chasing waterfalls.
Stick to the river selection you're used to.
It's good advice.
Crazy Sexy Cool by TLC.
We don't get any rap. The rap is like just so unbelievably awesome.
It's yeah,
so
good. That sounds great. I haven't listened to that since 1994. That sounds terrific.
Your kids don't love that song? I listen to that song with great regularity. It's on my Super Fun Kids mix. I love that one.
Yeah, that's great. You know, Creep is great too. That record sounds great.
I love Creep. So I Creep. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Off the top of your head, three greatest female trios. Go.
Well, I like Salt and Pepper. I'm gonna go ahead and put Salt and
Pepper because Spinderella definitely counts. The Supremes?
No, Diana Ross. I'm not going with Diana Ross and the Supremes. Too straight. I always thought Diana Ross sang too much on the one for me.
What about Destiny's Child?
Destiny's Child, I heard tell, was very popular.
Jeff, you got to take the Supremes, man. You're going to run out of room. We're supposed to get to three on this.
And it has to be trios.
TLC.
TLC.
What else we got?
Oh, what's that? Aren't one of the female punk acts a trio? Are the Yeah Yeah Yeahs a trio?
Oh, they might be, but isn't there a dude in the Yeah Yeah Yeahs?
I'm going to go ahead and take the Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
I don't think you can. I think I don't think that's an all girl.
I just did. I'm taking the yeah, yeah, yes.
Try to stop me.
All right.
All right. Well, you know, we'll have a podcast sometime devoted to female trios. We also have to have a podcast devoted to OG podcast listener Nina. Did you see that email she sent?
Unbelievable, Nina. Just throwing down problems. The next four seasons of ideas in one single email. Yeah.
So we're going to have to unpack that at some point.
That'll just be an interlude podcast. Like we answer Nina's emails. It'll be 2.5 hours.
I love it. Great. All right, gentlemen.
All right. Another triumph, Timmy. Well done.
The holiday season. Timmy's got a beautiful tree in the background of the shot, sure. Everyone. Uh-huh. He looks looking very festive.
Look at that.
Are any of you traveling?
I'm going to Boston.
Okay.
Ben? We're definitely having Christmas here. There's some talk of maybe going up to see my mom.
Okay. All right. My folks are in California, but they are in Merced, very near Stockton, visiting my Aunt Carol before they come to us. So
I didn't know Aunt Carol lived out there.
Aunt Carol lives in Merced. She sure does. Yeah. So be careful with the travel because this thing is contagious, man. We had all kinds of breakout cases in the last 2 days of school. We closed down just in time.
Helen's freaking out with the Ivy's closing for January.
Oh, did they? I didn't realize that they'd already made that call.
Yeah, they already did.
Yeah, I've had book club, and in the book club, there's these two other UT professors who are English professors, and they were like, well, do you think we'll be online? And what do you think? I was like, hell no. Do you realize the state we live in? We're a state institution. We're not going to be online. We're going to be in person, breathing on each other. Yeah. That's a lock. That's
wow. Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, you know, we have a 100% vaccinated community. And we played, did I say this last week? The girls basketball team went to a tournament and played against an unvaccinated team, like a, you know, a private school evangelical where they choose not to vaccinate. And six of our kids got it.
So Jeepers.
Even with the double vax and in some cases, three boosters. So I think athletics are a little too breathy and sweaty to avoid transmission. So.
Unbelievable. All right. Well, a good thing we have a podcast to fall back on.
Yes. Right. Yeah, that's true. That's why this damn thing started.
That's right. All right, guys.
Well, have a great
day. Have a great day.
Merry Christmas at all. Yeah.
Hey, if you're having as much fun as we are, leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a rating on Spotify, iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a shout. And then check us out on Twitter or at our Facebook page, 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Introducing the Deep Leadership Podcast. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former submarine officer who spent 22 years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters.
Leadership matters.
Deep Leadership is real-world, actionable leadership advice from John and his expert guests. Become a leader worth following. Subscribe today.
Electric Acid.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Peter.
We're the founders of Electricast Media, bringing you great podcasts like Nightmare Road Stories, Tech Talk Revolution, and Bodacious Minds.
Electricast networks include Ruby for female empowerment, the Best Business Network, and GPN for geopolitics. We built this company to create community and amplify diverse voices, and we really appreciate your support.
So, keep listening to Electricast podcasts and hear the culture.
Electricast.